and welcome to episode 2 of our Witcher Silk Mill podcast. In today's episode, I speak to mill weaver Shannon Bai about bobbin winding and Nick Traylin from Uppingham Yarns about the pros and cons of weaving with silk. So joining me next to our 19th century winding frame on the top floor of the mill is Shannon. So tell me, Shannon, what is this great piece of machinery and what does it do?
So it's our winding frame. We use that to get our silk thread that comes in onto bobbins, because we need them on our bobbins to go on a crill, which obviously then becomes the warp. So to start the whole process off, we've got to start right at the beginning and get them everything onto those bobbins. Those bobbins are unique to us. They're our heritage bobbins. They are the ones that fit the crill, which is the next bit of equipment it has to go to get to the next process. So a lot of things nowadays will come on cones instead of skeins. So the machine in its heyday when it was made, it would have had what we call hanks or skeins, weaving such a vast... There's so many different terminologies for the first thing, so people will know them as different things. A lot of visitors explain to me that they remember when they were kids, they're holding their hands out apart from each other and their mums wrapping yarn around their hands to make these, and that's basically the same thing. So it's a skein or a hank, which would then go on to a frame. It's kind of like a spindly thing, looks a bit like the spokes in your bike, and then it sits onto that. There's a couple of weights put hanging off the bottom of it, so you get good tension, and then it's going to wind right up onto the bobbin, and then round it goes. So this machine's going to drive it round. It's just going to keep going round and round and round, hence wind the bobbin up.
Ah, the famous nursery rhyme.
Absolutely. I hear quite a few of those when winding, and people come up, and that's instant. The parents like, oh, wind the bobbin up. That's it, stuck in my head for the rest of the day. But yeah, that is where it comes from, pretty much. You know, you're winding the bobbins up. So that's what the machine does for us. There's obviously lots of little components to it. You get these little porcelains that are like in a little V shape. That come up from the skein that you've popped on to come up to the bobbin, and they track back and forth to either side of the bobbin so that you can so it fits within the bobbin's width. So they're all tailored again to the bobbins that we use, our heritage bobbins. So that fits perfectly. You're getting nice edges in there, nice good tension, because everything that you'll ever know about weaving, if there's one thing we can drive, a point we can drive through, is tension is critical, is crucial to making sure that warp works right. So even straight from that beginning, it's crucial to get that right, and that's what this beautiful piece of equipment, this machine, does for us.
That sounds amazing. And there's so many different components to the machine, isn't there, as well? So yeah. So many different things you have to watch out for and do to the machine.
Yeah.
So how long does the whole winding process take?
So it can depend. There's lots of different types of silk. So a lot of people think of silk, they think of that lovely, shiny, sheen, soft. But there's lots of different types. So if I start with raw silk, for instance, it is literally you pluck a hair from your head and then you're thinking that's about it, really. So it's very fine and it's kind of got a coarseness to it, because that is literally pretty much how it comes off the cocoon. So when it boils off from the cocoon and it gets made up, it's got a gum still on it from where it was wrapped round. The edges, where the moth wraps it round, it glues it together, but you've still got a bit of that gum on. And that's actually quite helpful for when we're weaving, because it gives a bit of strength to it. So it gets woven with some of that gum still on it, and when it comes off, it gets boiled off, and then you get that light floaty silk. But then you've got organza, which is like that, but it's been boiled off, and it's nice fine stuff still. It's got a beautiful sheen to it, takes colour really beautifully. And then you see that a lot of like silk ties and things like that. Or you've got spun silk, which quite often gets confused for cottons. It's a bit coarser. It's usually composed of lots of little bits of silk that have been spun together, but it's really warm. It's lovely. It's fuzzy. You know, when you think of getting a scarf for winter, that's what you think of. It's nice and soft. So a lot of our scarves we produce will be made in spun silk. And each three of those are different density, they're different weights, so one will fit a lot more onto a bobbin than another and will wind a lot quicker. So your spun silk, you won't fit as much on, so it will wind a lot quicker I mean, you can pop a bobbin on, and 10 minutes later it's half full, 20 minutes later it's full. Whereas with organzine, you can be winding maybe 2, 3, 4 bobbins in one day. So it completely depends on what we're winding.
Wow, so you really sort of have to plan your time, really, and plan your day and the design and to what you're winding.
I think anything that we do in the mill is literally, it has our customer needs to know that it takes time, and it depends on what we're weaving for them as well. Because all amongst that, the winding frame might decide to have a hissy fit. So it's time consuming, unless we're using spun silk, but it's a long process.
And this machine is sort of 200 years old again, isn't it? So it's allowed to have a hissy fit, isn't it, every now and then?
Yeah. And you know what? It actually, out of a lot of the machines we've got, it's a workhorse. It keeps going. I mean, we use it so frequently. But, you know, we really don't, compared to other things, we really don't have all too many problems with it. It's a really clever piece of engineering. It's really been thought through, and you can see how it works. So it's not some kind of, you know, if you ever get the opportunity to have a look at it, you can see how it functions. It's not this massive tangle of wires that red one's got to go into blue, and it's been engineered beautifully so that it's something we can continue to look after, continue to fix and keep going. Yeah.
So just following on from that a little bit, how is it powered? How does it work?
So obviously originally it would have been powered by the water wheel, which, funny enough, this particular piece of machinery is the last thing that can still be powered by a water wheel. We use a motor, along as we do with the other parts of the weaving process, or electric motors now. It gives us that bit more control, but if we ever had an instance where we were like, oh no, the motor's broken and we need to get 10 more bobbins out, it's one of those things where if we needed to, we could still switch to water wheel power, which is really great. But no, it is mostly electric motor. It just gives us that control that we need. It's just a lot easier.
Mm-hmm. And earlier on, you mentioned a little bit about silk and the cocoons. So where does our silk actually come from?
Obviously, so we buy from other silk mills within the country who dye it here, but our silk's all Chinese silk. So a lot of our silk comes from China. It just happens to be that climate. So you get in Vietnam and stuff, it's just the Asian climate. That's what the moth likes the most. So trying to do it here, it's you have to, greenhousing is a lot more so complicated. So to try and make the volume we do, the amount of silk we need, is a lot more complicated here. And you've got to have the right mulberry and all that, right climate. And it's they're very temperamental things, the silkworm. They like what they like. And the Chinese climate is what they like, so mm-hmm. Yeah, and they've held the secret for silk for so long now, you know, so they've got it down to a T.
And you also mentioned earlier as well that the differences, so back in the day it would have come in on skeins or hanks.
Yes.
It comes in on cones now?
Yeah. And again, like modern mills, so obviously eventually we'll talk about the krill, but it's where we put all the individual bobbins to make all the threads to go for the warping. But modern mills now will have a version of that that holds cones. So it's like a big tower with spikes all coming off the side, and the cones all slit onto the sides of it and run straight from the cone. So it's a lot easier now for production nowadays to have it come straight onto cone. It can be dyed on the cone and it can be sent off on the cone. So for a lot of places, it cuts out the middleman. But obviously we love our heritage, so for us, we're keeping up with that tradition of using all of our classic machinery. So you just have to kind of keep going. We've kind of modified it a little bit. We have little wooden spikes to hold the cones and to roll them up to come onto the bobbins.
Mm-hmm. So essentially, although there are probably easier, quicker ways of doing it, you really are getting an authentic piece of silk from us, because we are going through all the steps and all the process.
There's particular pieces we do and we weave that go off to period dramas, and I think also when buying stuff for productions like that and making costumes, I guess it's nice to have that feel of it's authentic, like it's come from somewhere where it would have done in the time period that they're setting their program. It's got a bit more charm to it. Mm-hmm. And we all like to say that our looms have a bit of quirk to them. Mm-hmm. So they do little things that obviously flawless, great big new machines wouldn't do. And we like to call them quirks. So you still get that charm, I think, out of using our heritage machines.
Mm. And talking of charm, do you like using the machine? Has it got a charm of its own? Or
yeah, actually using it from cones can sometimes cause quite a rattle. So it's like, there's like this little porcelain bar where it comes up from, and we have to wrap it round that a few times to create the tension. Because as I was saying before, there's a skein that goes on, the bike spindle, as I referred to it as. But you can put weights on that to create tension. From a cone, you can't. So we have to wrap that round, which means the porcelain rattles against the metal bar, so you're getting this really loud, tingy noise. But when it's just running from bobbin to bobbin, it's got this kind of nice hum to it. And if you're not on the same floor, I mean, you probably heard it's from another floor in the mill, you can kind of hear this hum, like, and it's like the mill's living because it's got this like sound to it. So yeah, I think it's, in a way, when I'm not got jingling porcelains, it's quite a nice piece of like background hum, and it's quite nice to sit and watch the bobbins being wound whilst listening to it.
Lovely. Yeah, and I imagine apart from the jingling but I imagine it's quite therapeutic as well, watching it and listening to it.
Definitely, and watching the bobbin slowly build, and especially if you've got a variety of colours that you're building, so you've got a stripy warp to make to be woven, you've got nice variety of colours, and they're all rainbowing down the edge of the machine, and it's really pretty, and it's quite, like you say, therapeutic to watch it go from one to the other, and the shine of the silk going across the lights, It's a spectacle, definitely. Something to watch.
Colourful, spectacular.
Yeah.
What about dyeing? Do we do any dyeing of silk here?
We don't anymore, unfortunately. We do buy our yarn in pre-dyed from other mills within the country. We just don't have the facility to do it anymore. We would have done it years ago when it would have been in little dye baths, which we still have about, but obviously... You would have had teams of people to do that kind of thing. We're a lot smaller now. It's and also it's harder to keep a record. We've got to keep a record of all the different dyeing, like trying to get the measurements again. If we ever wanted to do the same colour, we might be off. I know that we work in dye lots anyway, so when we order new yarn in from other places that dye it, we tend to try to keep one dye lot for one warp, so that it doesn't, you know, because you can create marks because there can be a slight little element off. So there'd be the tricky bits of dyeing. So, we don't dye in-house anymore. It's a tricky balance when it comes to dyeing. So we leave it to mills that have better facilities for us to do that now. We haven't got the room or the numbers.
Mm-hmm. It's got to be perfect, doesn't it?
So. Yeah. Definitely.
Absolutely. No imperfections here. So you mentioned earlier as well about the winding frame and how it all works. Are there any other machines that we have that also do winding?
Yep, we have two other machines. Three if you count one, but one does the same. Both, two of them do the same thing. So the doubler, which sits next to our winding frame here, you can take two colours and twist them together. It'll twist them together for us, and it makes these beautiful colours and twists them. Or if we'd ordered in a particular weight of yarn, so we work in threads, so it'll say two thread, one thread. So it's, you can imagine lots of tiny bits of silk put together, two of them together, creates two thread. Well, we've ordered all that in, and we go, oh no, we need four thread now for weaving with. So then we can use the doubler to take the two thread and make it into four thread, or if we want to make it more, into six thread. So we can take multiple of what we've already got, and the machine will double it together for us, and then we've got a thicker thread. So we don't always necessarily have to go, oh no, this thread isn't thick enough, what are we going to do now? We can always take what we've got and make it thicker. So that's the doubler. We always have a volunteer who comes in and makes beautiful colours with it, which we sell in our shop. So we take lovely old vintage bobbins, and he winds these beautiful colours together, so like blues and whites or golds and purples, and he twists them and makes these beautiful colours. So stunning little objects. But we also have a pern winder. So when it comes to weaving, you've got the warp, which is the bit that kind of comes directly towards you. That's the main bit that stays on the loom. and then you've got your weft. And when I was learning to weave, I always remembered as it went weft to right or weft is left. So that's the stuff that comes across. So to get that bit to go across the loom, we have to put it on what's called a pern. It's a little peg thing, almost, and that sits inside a shuttle that goes back and forth through the loom, building and making the woven cloth. So to get to that stage, we need to take that pern and put it on the pern winder. And it kind of slots on, you can put multiples on and it'll just keep moving around. It's quite a spectacular thing to watch it kind of click round. But we take whatever the yarn is that we're wanting to use for our weft, the right, and wind it up over and twist it round so it comes up over something that weird little contraption almost looks like a yo-yo. And that holds the tension, it comes down and the machine builds it for you. So it's like a little arm that just runs up and down the pern, and that builds up. And eventually you've got a full pern which can go into your shuttle and create your weft. So that's our winding frame, our pern winder. So that's one we tend to start with when you're first learning. You wind in the perns for the weaver, which is how our senior weaver started when she first got to the mill.
Oh, amazing. Yeah. Oh, brilliant. Well, thank you so much. That was really, really interesting. I've now got Wind the Bobbin stuck in my head, and I probably will have for some time.
Oh, yeah, it stays.
So that was really interesting. Thank you so much. And there's not too many places that have a setup like this, so which is incredible. So it's really a unique place, Whitchurch Silk Mill. So we'll find out a little bit more about what comes next in the next episode. So Shannon talked to us a little bit about silk and where it comes from, and while we specialise in silk at the mill, it's not actually often always a weaver's first choice of yarn to work with. So I'd now like to welcome Nick Traylan from Uppingham Yarns to talk more about his vast array of yarns that you use and that you stock, and whether silk is actually worth a go for someone's next weaving project. So Nick, just to start off with, could you tell us just a little bit about Uppingham Yarns?
Okay, well, Uppingham Yarns, we started the business in 1980, started with my father, and then I took it on, and we aim to specialise in all types of yarns, or we try to specialise in lots and lots of different types of yarns, fibres. Basically, we supply universities, home crafters, small little knitwear industries, and designers. They like to come to us because we have, as you said, we have a broad range of different types of fibre, including silk. And hopefully we satisfy people with the exciting stuff we have. We have everything from wool to cashmeres, lambswool silk, of course, and also wonderful, what I call interesting, exciting, scientific type yarns, yarns that do things. You can take them, put them in your fabric, and they will do things for you. Heat resistant, heat sort of formable, light reactive, and lots and lots of things like that. So hopefully, you know, we're great for the sort of anyone that needs a yarn or a thread.
That's amazing. And you were saying some of your yarns do things as well. So it keeps those, I imagine, is that using clothing and things like that? Or is it all sorts of different...
Well, as I say, we use quite a lot with the... Yeah, it is, yeah. Commercially, it will be used in clothing. For instance, what we call the thermoformal yarn is used in things like shoes. They'll sort of use it to stiffen the fabric. So you put it in the sort of heel, so you get a sort of stiff area. There's also, as I say, the light reactive ones, the ones a bit like those, you know, those strips you have on your sort of vests. The security and police and all that sort of thing. We do that yarn and obviously they feed it in, so you get these sort of, you can put it into your knitwear or your cloth, so you get that sort of seen in the dark, that sort of thing. We also do glow-in-the-dark ones as well. So it's great for the people to use and have fun with because they can do so much, and particularly with students, you see the wonderful things they do. It's great. I love textiles, so it's a great thing to see, and a great thing to see what people do with it. It's marvellous.
Yeah, that sounds great. I've got visions of students coming up with glow-in-the-dark pieces and all sorts of stuff.
Yes. We used to also have an ultraviolet one, And I always wondered if they ever built it into their fabric. So when it was on the catwalk, it had a message that came up when you shine an ultraviolet. Nobody told me that.
But, oh, brilliant. It'd be the highlight of London Fashion Week or something
well,
like that.
Well, I know, yes, that's what I thought, yes.
And you said that your father started this business, is that right? How long have you been going for?
Well, we started in 1980, and we started primarily supplying what we call the home machine knitting trade. But over the years, things have changed. Different markets have come, hand knitting, cross stitch or whatever. So we basically moved to different markets, and particularly nowadays, there's the sort of home crafting and the weaving, spinning, and as well as the knitting is quite strong. So we just try and find a product for those particular markets. So we've sort of changed, and of course, obviously, the internet's become an awful lot more important nowadays. I should think about virtually 80% of our trade now is online, because as you probably aware, the internet is a fantastic shop window for you. So you can show your product. We obviously have a presence. And you can sort of look the product. The only thing you can't do is the feely touchy thing. But apart from that, it's a fantastic, you know, you can build these things so big now. It's great.
Fantastic. Wow. Okay. And you said you know, you have lots of different types of yarn that you stock. What proportion of it is silk? And do you have like a bestseller?
I should think about 5 to 10% of our range is silk. There's various different types of silks. We obviously have sort of normal spun silks. We have silk bouclés, very thick tusser silks. We also do silk fibres. So there are quite a few silks in our range, about 10%. Bestseller yarn at the moment would be our lamb's wool, our 217 lamb's wool, which is produced in the UK, hooray. There aren't many, unfortunately, in the trade as it is.
No.
But it changed. It's a bit seasonal. As I say, lambswool's very big at the moment. I know that silk for us tends to be about the beginning of the year. People tend to turn a bit more to silk and then to cotton. But at the moment, as I say, lambswool is the big one at the moment.
Fantastic. And do you know where the yarn goes to? So, you know, companies that use it, do you know what it turns into? Or
I know the lamb's wool, for instance, a lot of it or quite a bit will go into small little industrial companies. You know, when you go to a show and you see these people produce you a nice little garment, a semi sort of felted garment. Well, we know we sell quite a lot into them, and they are producing their garments, and also small industries who only need a cone or two, then they tend to come to us. As far as other fibres, silks and whatever, again, designers will probably use it into specialist garments. The weavers tend to use it a lot because it's such a good product to use when weaving, as you probably know, being a silk mill. The thing that's always a shame for me is I often sell a lot of this yarn, and you never actually see the end product. It's wonderful when people send me sort of images or even see the product. I can see what it turns into. Or you go, as you mentioned, the Graduate Fashion Week, you go to see that and you can actually see some of your yarn up there, which is great. It gives you a great warm feeling, really. It's a splendid thing. So long answer to a short question, lots and lots of different things it goes into, but I don't always see them, unfortunately.
No, like you said, it must be a real treat to see what happens at the end. And I think that's what's quite nice at the silk mill as well, is that we do sometimes, you know, we obviously create the fabric on the roll, and that leaves us, you know, that leaves our mill. So we have seen the finished product, if you like, as in the fabric, but then we also don't sometimes see what it gets made into either until it might appear in a film two years later or something like that. And everybody's like, oh, I remember this. Is that ours? I think it is. Like, so it is a real treat, isn't it, when you do yes. see it at the end. It's quite
you
special,
do, you
isn't
do.
It?
And you're right about the film industry, because we do want to obviously have to match things for things for people. But you don't always realise, or they say it's going to be in the film, but of course there's no recognition, there's no sort of this was made with Uppingham Yarns or this was made at Whitchurch with silk mill, unfortunately.
Yeah, I know. It'd be nice. It'd be a big arrow in the film, sort of. Yeah, big label on. Brilliant. So, as you know, with the silk mill, we do weave predominantly with silk most of the time. So as a sort of a yarn expert, what do you think are the pros and cons of using silk or weaving with silk?
Well, what I actually did was I went to see Weavers, Spinners and Dyers, one of their branch meetings, and I actually asked weavers themselves. I said I was going to do this and said, what would you say are the pros and sort of cons of using silk? And they say, basically, there's more pros and very little con. The pros are, particularly if you're using a good quality silk, it's the sort of thing that's good for a beginner because you've got a lot of strength there. So when you're setting things up like a warp, you know that you've got the strength, even if you're a little bit inexperienced, you've got that lovely sort of nice tension and keep going with it. You know, with the loss of the shorter staple yarn, something like a lamsel, unless you set up correctly, you get problems, as you're probably aware. So it's good for that reason. It doesn't tend to what we call fluff up. Because of the nature of silk, it's quite a long staple. So, of course, you're not going to get that fluffy sort of type of fabric when you're sort of weaving with it. It's great because it gives wonderful properties, like it's good for drape. A fabric produced in silk is a wonderful drapey fabric, and it's superb to look at because you've got that lovely little luster to it. So basically, it's a nice, I suppose I'd call reasonably safe yarn to use, which gives you lovely results. Now, also, it's, as I said, strength. It's a good one, I'd say. As you probably know, you're probably aware of that. Cons, I don't think there really are any. The only one I've heard of they mentioned is if you get a poor quality silk that's a little bit weak or something, then you may get the breaking, which I talked about earlier on. Or if it's not colour fast, of course, you may get bleeding into the rest of your fabric, which of course totally ruins it. As long as you have a good quality silk, in theory, you shouldn't have any problems at all.
Brilliant. That's fantastic. So there's a lot of sort of longevity to silk then as well.
Indeed. Yes. Yeah. And it's got a long shelf life as well. It's not as if it's going to sort of deteriorate on your shelves. It's great. It's a lovely, versatile fabric.
And do you think, so in your opinion as well, you were talking earlier about seasonal, so some yarns are more popular at certain times of the year. Do you think, sort of following from that, that there is any fibres that are more sustainable than others or perhaps better to be used than others?
Well, sustainability is very much coming into the fore now. It's quite interesting because I went off to Pitti Filati, which is in Italy, and it's in Florence, so someone has to do it, you know. But the thing that I noticed over the last few years is how the big spinners were bringing this organic, sustainable, environmentally friendly thing to the front of their stands. It used to sit in the corner at the back, but now they've brought it very much to the front. They're all hanging their sort of flag on this sort of sustainable environmental sort of thing as far as fibres are concerned. And there are quite more and more products that are becoming available because there is public interest, definitely. And as I say, particularly from our students, we've had a lot of interest in sustainable products. And there's all sorts available. As I say, there's organic ones. There are now lots of recycled ones. There are biodegradable ones. In other words, they will degrade once you put them in the ground. So it's all thinking green. For instance, one of the, you've probably heard of Tencel, which of course is it's a silk substitute, basically. Well, now they're very much it's one of the most friendly because they have what they call the closed loop process. So what they're doing is they're basically taking a tree, plant a tree, and then all the water and everything they use in the process, they recycle. So it's becoming a fantastic, as I say, close loop, green product. The only sort of thing I will say is that there's a lot is price sensitive, should I say, or industry is a bit price sensitive. So, of course, I remember there was a case I was talking to one of my students, and they said they were given the brief to go and find out about sustainable organic products. So they went off, Julian found it, came back to the sort of design management team and said, I found all these wonderful products. I said, oh, that's good. That's very interesting. And the price will be. And she said, it's this. And they went, oh, right. No, I don't think our customers are quite ready for this yet. So until we sort of, it's like I always ask the question, you know, if you're a young mother or whatever, and you have the option of buying 4 or 5 little kiddies white T-shirts for, say, £10, or one sustainable organic T-shirt for 40, what is your choice going to be? Mm-hmm. I always say that, you see, because it's quite important, I think. So we are moving that way, but will people do that price bit?
Absolutely, yeah. I guess it's everybody's very mindful at the moment, aren't they, of, you know, climate change and you know, price of living, quality of living, all that sort of thing, isn't it? So all these things kind of contribute, don't they? And as you said, we've got some big sort of thinking to do, really, haven't we? If we want to move forward, we've got to sort of change our attitudes and this sort of throwaway.
That's it. Yeah, unfortunately, the textile market has become a throwaway market. Mm-hmm. And until we start thinking, you know, we don't need this. We want quality. We want to pay, you know, we don't mind paying a bit more. And, you know, it's something that's a better quality product, or we'll keep it, or last us. Then things will probably change, and for the better.
For the better. And it's nice that you were saying about some of the yarns that you have that, you know, biodegradable and sort of things. So it's nice to have a sort of a positive sort of story coming from textiles, isn't it, really? You know, and especially climate change, it's all quite negative a lot of the time, isn't it? So it's actually quite nice to know that there's some positive stories out there and some good things that people are doing, isn't it, to go forward. So that's brilliant. So going back to silk, some of the silk yarns that you have, we obviously love the fibre because we use it all the time, but we are probably a little bit biased, and obviously it's, you know, what we do, and our weavers are obviously very, very skilled in using silk. But would you encourage people to use silk in their weaving projects or whatever they're using it with? Do you think it's sort of something it's good to start with, or something you have to work up and build up to?
Well, as I said, it is a lovely product, and it is quite a forgiving product. So, of course, it is quite nice. As the lady said, it's quite a good one to begin with. And I always say with what you sort of put in, you get out, is what I always say. So, in fact, if you're using a lovely product such as silk, which has wonderful luster, wonderful drape properties, all these wonderful pluses to it, and you're prepared to spend that money, you get the result out. It's like I always say to the students, I said, you know, you've chosen sort of just a humble acrylic there, or sort of a biscuit, whatever it may be, a sort of a cheaper sort of product. I say that's fine if you're sort of learning, experimenting, but if you want a nice product at the end that you love to look at, you have to put the money in. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if they're considering using silk, the answer is, I say, you're going to pay a bit more, but you will get the results at the other end. And I say that with a lot of the fibres, you know, and I say, well, that's because I'm selling it. But basically, what you put in, you tend to get back out again.
Yeah. Brilliant. I'm sure that would be really useful advice and helpful advice for lots of people about to venture into the world of silk and other yarns as well, definitely. And whereabouts are we talking to you from, Nick? Are you at work today, or...?
Yes, I'm in the office at work, in market town of Uppingham.
Uppingham, yeah.
Which is in the East Midlands. It's sort of an hour and a half north of London and about an hour south of Nottingham. We're sort of in the county of Rutland. I don't know if people have heard of Rutland or Rutland Water, or whatever. That's where we are. Smallest county in England.
Well, we're the smallest town here, so there we are. We've we've matched. Lovely. So you in? Is it like a factory that you've got, or a?
Well, yes, we've got. Well, it's a mixture. We have a warehouse, which we have all the products on display, and obviously we use that as the picking area. We also have our processing area where we're sort of bringing sort of product in from wherever, be it the UK or Italy. And then we often tend to rewind it, wind down, split down from big into little cones. So we've got sort of manufacturing, semi-manufacturing process going on within the sort of the back of the warehouse, so to speak. So we do have change going on, or whatever you want to call it, or manufacture. Yes, we do. Obviously not. No weaving or anything like that. We have, unfortunately, I haven't got a loom. I've got a sock knitter, a couple of sock knitters and thing, and knitting machines, but not a loom yet.
Oh, wow, brilliant. I like the sound of the sock knitting machine. We could do one of those. and just the last question, what is your favourite yarn, do you think? Have you got a favourite one?
Favourite yarn? Well, I like visual yarns, I suppose. I like yarns that do things, visual yarns. Recently, there's been this thing where they've all wanted fancy yarns and things like that. So you've had these wonderful, what I call technically produced yarns, things with sort of areas of slubs and all sorts of knots and all sorts of things. So they're wonderful things to look at. And it started with the scarf thing. So the Italians developed this machine which produced these wonderfully interesting yarns. We've got all different types. Some are based around what we call ladder type yarns, where you've got sort of cross structures and they'll be multicolored. Then you've got ones which basically look a bit like licorice all sorts on a string, where you've got areas of different color. And then one of the real interesting one I've got here, it's a plain color, but it's basically as if someone's put a lot of catkin or worms onto a fabric. So you're ending up with these sort of almost catkin-like things on a string. So, of course, when you put that in a fabric, you end up with all this almost like a 3D effect to your fabric. And it builds real interest. And it's a real visual thing. As I say, visual yarns, I like visual yarns. Okay, we love all lovely cashmeres and vicuna. They're superb, soft handle to them. But in a way, I'm always drawn to visual type yarns or things that do things.
Yeah, it was a lovely description as well. I love all the licorice all sorts one. I can that's my dad's favourite sweet, so I can just imagine him loving that. I imagine a big jumper made out of that. He'd love it. Brilliant. So thanks ever so much, Nick, for your time. It was so lovely for you to join us and talk to us all about yarns. It was really, really fascinating. And we'll be back next time, where we'll be moving on to warping and talking to Ellie from Elka Textiles all about her design inspirations. So don't forget to follow us on all our social media channels and also subscribe to our podcast. And see you next time.